So good morning, everyone, and a good Chodesh. I was asked by Rabbi Epstein to speak this morning very briefly about a topic that's very close to my heart, and that is, of course, the nature of the relationship between Israel and the diaspora. And I would like to say as follows. When Israel was founded 70 years ago, in the Declaration of Independence that you see on the top of the source sheet, basically Ben-Gurion and all those that founded the state had to mention something about the fact that Jews are living around the world, namely not everyone's living in Israel. And this is basically what they said, and I quote, "We would like all the Jews around the world to basically come around the new state of Israel for three things. Number one, Aliyah, move to Israel. Number two, Bebinyan, build the state of Israel, which means money. Give us your money. And number three, to stand by its side. Israel is always correct." Those are the three things that Ben-Gurion and those that made the Declaration of Independence asked from Jews living outside of Israel. Either move to Israel, give us your, if you don't move to Israel, give us your money, and always say Israel is correct. Israel can never be wrong. And quite frankly, if you look at the second source on the page, for many, many years, in my humble opinion, and this continues to this day, there's what I call, in my American English, the highway relationship. Or how would you say it in proper English? What's a highway between towns?
A motorway
relationship. Cars are going this way and that way, and they have no relationship between them. So on the left side of the page, you see that the Gemara in Masechet Ketubot, Daf Chof Yud Amud Bet, says, "Lo'olam yadur adam be'eret Yisrael, afilu b'yishu ba'al beit chavim, v'yadur b'chul afilu b'yishu ba'al Yisrael." You should always live in Israel, even in a city that's dominated by idol worshippers, as opposed to living in the diaspora, even in a city that's dominated by Jews. Namely, you should make Aliyah and live in Israel. And if you don't live in Israel, we can care less about you.
Which is bizarre, because they were writing it in Bava.
That's right. Very bizarre. So, this is the halacha they wrote in Bava. We're about to see a dissenting opinion. But the Ramban, Nachmanides, makes a big deal out of this. He goes ahead and writes an interpretation on the Rambam's list of mitzvot. Have you read the book of the Rambam's list of mitzvot? So this is how you make a list of mitzvot. When you make a wedding, what you do is first you put all the names of the people that you want to invite, and then you put numbers next to the name. Then when you see the final count, you get a heart attack about how much it's going to cost you, correct? When you write a book of mitzvot, you do the opposite. First you write numbers, 1 through 613. Gentlemen, there has never been a machloket, any sort of a dispute, that there's only 613 biblical commandments. That's wonderful. Now, what are the 613? So each person had their own idea. The Rambam had his suggestion. The Smug had his suggestion. Comes along Nachmanides, sees the Rambam suggestion, and writes a book on the Rambam called, I quote, "The Mitzvot That the Rambam Forgot." You know, the Rambam was sitting. He may have forgotten something. You know, he wrote a book, the list of mitzvot. The man should have, he may have been forgetful Jones. And he writes, this is what the Rambam forgot. Mitzvah number 4. Shenitzavenu la'reshet ha'aretz ashenatan ha'kel yitbarach v'yitalel la'avoteinu. V'lo na'azva b'yedezu la'teinu min ha'umot o lishmama. We have an obligation to come and capture the land of Israel and make sure that it's always in Jewish hands. So basically, Israelis around the world who lived in Israel and visited the diaspora, basically told Jews, either make Aliyah, or excuse me for saying so, go jump in a lake. We'll take care of you in Israel. If you don't come to Israel, we have no reason to support you in your communities, let alone learn anything from you to our communities. We have this Gemara that says always live in Israel. We have this Ramban that every religious Zionist school learns almost by heart. And that's basically the way it was. On the other hand, the Jews of the diaspora came along on the right side of the page, and coming from the other side of the motorway, came and said to the Jews living in Israel, "Do respect, read the Gemara in Ketubot, and continue the Gemara to the next page." We quoted Daf Kuf Yud. This is Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, not page 110, 111. Rav Zera havika mishtamit minei de Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Zera would try not to meet Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was walking down the street, he saw him from afar, he went to the other side. Why? The Bai Lemesik L'Eretz Yisrael, because Rav Zera wanted to make Aliyah. And Rabbi Yehuda said, "Kol ha'olemi bavel l'Eretz Yisrael over ba'aseh." Whoever moves to Israel is violating a positive commandment. Not fulfilling, but violating. Why? Because it says in the book of Jeremiah, "Be'bavel ha'yuvahu v'shama yihiyu ad yom pokdi otam ne'um Hashem." That they're supposed to stay in Babel until Mashiach comes. So that's a very extreme statement. But just like the Gemara says, extremely, live in Israel in an idol worship town, because Israel is Israel. The Gemara also says, live in Babel until Mashiach comes. Rav Moshe Feinstein on the left, on the right side of the page, came along and said, and this is what I believe every Jew in the diaspora basically claims, and I believe the claim is halachically very, very astute and probably correct, that if you move to Israel, it's a mitzvah, no question. But if you don't move to Israel, it's not a problem of not fulfilling a mitzvah, you just didn't do that mitzvah. For example, how many people here went to sleep last night and said, you know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah I didn't fulfill yet? Divorce. There's a mitzvah of divorce in the Torah. You know, I didn't fulfill that mitzvah. I can't sleep at night. Rosh Chodesh Elul, Rosh Hashanah is coming. I need to fulfill the mitzvah of divorce.
It's a mitzvah aseh. It's
yes.
Mitzvah.
What kind of mitzvah is it? It's called a mitzvah kiyumit, namely, if and when a couple would like to dissolve a marriage, then there's a mitzvah of divorce. But it's not like you have to wake up in the morning and divorce your wife to fulfill this mitzvah. Do we have other mitzvot like
chasing
that?
Chasing away the bird.
If you don't want the eggs of the bird, you don't have to chase away the mother. No one says you have to get up in the morning and feel bad. It's not like tefillin that you get up in the morning and do every day, whether you like it or not. It's not like lulav on the first day of Sukkot. It's not like shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's a mitzvah that if and when the circumstances call for it, you do it. Do we have other mitzvot like that? How many people here ever slaughtered a chicken?
What'd you say?
I'm pretty sure you did. I never slaughtered a chicken. I didn't go to sleep last night saying I can't sleep. Tali said, why can't you? I didn't slaughter a chicken. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to slaughter. I never in my life slaughtered a chicken. If and when you want to eat kosher poultry, there's a way to do it. But no one has to feel bad that they don't. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein in this beautiful tshuva, living in Israel is the same way. If and when you move to Israel, it is a mitzvah. But you don't have to go to sleep at night feeling bad that you didn't fulfill that mitzvah. Just like the mitzvah of tzitzis is if and when you wear a four-cornered garment, he said so too in Israel. Now, this is the way it's been for many years. Jews in Israel say make aliyah or jump in a lake, and the Jews around the world said we don't have to make aliyah, don't tell us what to do. In my humble opinion, we have to change the rhetoric. Because we're living in the age in which social media and technology means that everything that happens in Israel, you know about at exactly the same time I know about it. Just like I have a cell phone with the news briefs, you have that cell phone. And therefore, I don't believe we can continue in this kind of relationship. And I'd like to go to a relationship in which we learn from each other. Israeli communities should learn from diaspora communities and vice versa. Now, what can Israeli communities learn from diaspora communities? Because there are different cultures and there are different places, and there's a lot of differences
between Israel and manners.
How to drive, savlanut, patience. Let's continue here. Everything I agree with. You know, in Israel we have manners, just different manners. Like, for example, around the world, if you're on a bus and you step on someone's foot, you say, I'm sorry, excuse me. In Israel, if you step on someone's foot, you tell them, what's the matter? You can't be careful? Different manners. Manners we have. Make a long story short, I'd like to suggest two things that Israel can learn from diaspora communities and vice versa. One thing that maybe Israel can teach diaspora communities. First of all, community-oriented rabbinate and governors. It's no secret that in Israel there's rabbis of towns, there's a chief rabbinate, there's barely rabbis of communities and shuls. In certain places we have it, mainly enclaves of the Engelo community, like Ra'anana, Beit Shemesh, etc. But in most places they don't. Not only that, but when you ask the rabbi of a town, what's your job description? My job full-time is to place rabbis. I collect job descriptions. Here's one on the page here. I put it down on the page. This is what the rabbi has to do. What is the job description of a rabbi in Israel? If you look on the left side of the page, I put it in Hebrew. I try to find it. It's basically like this. You're supposed to take care of the religious needs of the town until you're 75. When you're 75, we'll make sure you're healthy until you're 80. If you didn't drop dead before you're 80, then you're out. So Rav Lau, father, was the rabbi of Tel Aviv. He turned 80. He's out. What's the job description of Rav Lau? I asked Rav Lau, what's your job description? It's hard for him to answer that question. Rav Lau doesn't mince words. Rav Lau knows how to speak. Rav Lau,
father or son?
Father doesn't know what his job description. He never got a job description. I think Israeli communities need local rabbis. I've seen the youth in Israel. They would benefit greatly from local rabbis. They would benefit greatly from a shul that has a proper governance, not just a gabbai, but a president and a vice president and whatnot. They would benefit greatly from all of this. And therefore, in my humble opinion, if you turn the page, we'd be able to get to a situation in which Israeli rabbis would be able to act not like Eli's son, but like Eli. Eli, as you know, was the grand Kohen and the, I would say, spiritual leader of the Jewish people in the times of Shmuel. Shmuel was his student prodigy, and Shmuel's mother's name was Chana. We read about her in the first day of Rosh Hashanah. It says in the Pasuk in Shmuel that when Shmuel got older, he wanted his sons to take over. But his sons didn't exactly follow in its footsteps. The Pasuk says, Vayushem beno abechor Yoel v'shem ishneu aviyah, Yoel and aviyah, which means that Yoel and Aviyah did not follow in the footsteps of their father Shmuel, but rather they took a lot of corruption money. Comes along the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos and says, whoever says that the sons of Shmuel sinned,
sons of Eli,
is wrong. Why? Says the Gemara, they didn't sin. They just didn't follow in the footsteps of their father. What would their father Shmuel do? Says the Gemara, the following: Shaya Shmuel hatzadik mechazer bechol hamekomot vedan otam ba'arihem. He would walk around Israel and go to the people. He would visit the sick, comfort the bereaved. He would give services and not stay in his office. However, his sons, what did they do? They sat in their office, said, you want me? Come to me. So first of all, a whole segment of the population said, we don't need you. We can do well without a rabbi. That happens in Israel all the time. The small segment of the population that needed the rabbi, they have to go in to see the rabbi. So they make an appointment. They call up at 10 o'clock in the morning, no answer. 11 o'clock, no answer. 2 o'clock, no answer. Finally, they come into the office all upset. They say, what's the matter? You don't work here? And the secretary says, no. In the afternoon, we're off. In the morning, we don't work. So basically, to get in to the sons of Shmuel, you had to pay the secretary a little money. You had to pay the head of the chambers a little money. And eventually, you got in. What did Shmuel do? He did the opposite. He went to the people. Any rabbi in the diaspora knows, if you sit in your office in a synagogue, no one's going to come to you. You've got to go out there. You've got to have coffee breaks with people. You've got to go to their homes. You've got to make classes in living rooms and whatnot in order to get to the people. And in my humble opinion, Israel would only gain from this. Number two, what unites us is far greater than what divides us. In Israel today, we are dealing with a situation where the conservative and reform movement want to have some sort of a stronghold in Israeli society. How do we deal with them? Outside of Israel, rabbis, Orthodox rabbis, know how to deal with conservative and reform rabbis. Each one has their own policy, but they have experience. In Israel, we have no experience. And therefore, if you look on the source sheet, I'm not even going to translate into Hebrew what it says on the left side, but if you know Hebrew, you'll see that a certain rabbi in Israel said that the Reform and conservative are even worse than the secular Israelis. Imagine a statement like that. The Reform and conservative who have mixed seating, etc., are even worse than the secular Israelis. Secular Israelis have nothing, but the Reform and conservative has changed Judaism, and therefore they're much worse. We have nothing to do with them. We don't want to talk to them. We don't even want to have a conversation with them. They don't exist. So you all know the controversy around the Kotel. I'm sure you heard about it. You've all heard about the various things that are happening in the past year. In my humble opinion, we'd be able to have some sort of a conversation with them if we would ask our peers around the world, rabbis, who are dealing with conservative liberal movements for years. How do you deal with them? What are your red lines? What are your boundaries? Do you come together when you can or not? And in my humble opinion, the answer would be, what unites us is far greater than what divides us. But in place of that, Israel comes along and says that they're terrible, they're awful, we don't want anything to do with them. In my humble opinion, if Israelis would learn from diaspora communities two things, just two things. I can think of 10 more, but two main things. Number one, there's a notion of a community rabbi who deals with the community, he goes out to the community and ultimately takes responsibility for a segment of the population. Doesn't sit in his office and waits for a couple to come to register for marriage, but goes out to the people. And number two, actually knows how to deal with the conservative and reform and liberal movements, we'd have a far greater society in Israel, one that everyone can be proud of. Now, I can't only say Israel has what to learn from the diaspora. I said we can learn from each other. Allow me to suggest something that perhaps Israel can teach diaspora communities. And that's the following. We all have synagogues outside of Israel. But is synagogue the only place that you can influence Jews to Judaism?
No.
No. What are the other places?
Schools.
Schools and shuls are two institutions. Many, many an Israeli has an allergy to come into a shul, let alone a religious school. So where do Israelis who care, about the fact that Israelis don't know the basics of Judaism and are not warmed up by the Torah, where do they influence them? Answer? Everywhere. Everywhere. For example, this coming Yom Kippur, they're going to make special minyans for non-religious, secular Israelis, not in shuls, they don't want to come to shuls, they have an allergy to shuls, in Jewish community centers in Israel called Matnasim. We have a program of Or Torah Stone that puts rabbis in these JCCs throughout the year, and they do Jewish programming. And many of their classes are full, many of their programming are wonderful. And as a matter of fact, we pay 50% and they pay 50%. Albeit, not in a shul. JCC. So they can play tennis, they can go swimming, they can play basketball, and at the same time, there's another room with Jewish programming. Moreover, come Shavuos. Shavuos is one of the best secrets that the Jewish people keep. There's a few secrets we keep, right? For example, there's a prohibition of Lashon Hara. Have you heard of it? Don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. It's a secret. There's a secret. There's certain secrets we don't tell people. One of the secrets is Shavuos. Shavuos is a holiday without any tangible mitzvah, no matzah, no sukkah. So many people don't know about it. In Israel, it's a day off. It's a formal day off. So what do you do on Shavuos? You learn all night. Again, shul, not for a secular Israeli. Where do they do the all-night learning? You ready for this?
Absolutely.
On the beachfront. On the beachfront! They light it up. They have all-night learning. Not learning that you're used to. Learning what they have panels of politicians, journalists that come and talk about Judaism from their perspective. And there's a debate. But the bottom line is, Judaism is put on the agenda of the secular Israelis simply because we didn't limit their exposure to Judaism to coming to into the shul. It could be in the beachfront. It could be at the cafe. It could be at the JCC. In my humble opinion, a shul is so important in the diaspora. But if all programming comes and happens in a shul, it could be a very scary place. Let's be honest. When you come into the shul and you see all the Hebrew books and you don't know how to read Hebrew, you're very scared. You feel very much out of place. It's like what I felt the first time I ever davened with a Sephardic community. I felt like someone that is a returnee to Judaism, like a convert. I had no idea what was flying. A Sephardic, ever kick an Ashkenazi, put him in a Sephardic synagogue, he doesn't know what's flying, he doesn't understand. That feeling happens to anyone that's not comfortable in a synagogue. So in my humble opinion, Israel is a bit ahead on this level, in the sense of, Israel has come to the realization that Judaism can't be limited to the synagogue or school, those two S's that are so important. It has to be something far greater than that. And finally, I believe that if we continue this conversation, then in my humble opinion, we can continue to learn from one another all our best practices. It would be my dream to have a website of best practices, what we do right in the diaspora, what we do right in Israel, and we can learn from each other. Certain things can't be taken from the diaspora to Israel. For example, what we're doing now. Sunday morning in Israel, at this time of the morning, it is impossible to have a class. Why? Day of work. Okay, I got it. Sunday is not a day to make programming because Sunday is like Monday, like Tuesday, like Wednesday. Got it. So in Israel, instead of Sunday, we got Friday. I'm sorry?
Friday mornings.
Okay. But my humble opinion, we're going to make a very, very grave mistake if we don't use and utilize the treasure of diaspora communities that have experience for years and years and years, and vice versa. If diaspora communities don't learn best practices from Israel, in my humble opinion, if we're able not to have a relationship in which we just say, make aliyah versus no, we're not making aliyah, but rather, let's learn from each other. In my humble opinion, Israel will become a better place, and diaspora communities will become a better place as well. God willing, as we get into the month of Elul, I'm hoping that this will happen. There'll be much more conversation between the two communities, and both communities will become far greater and better. Thank you all very much.